Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It's Monday, the 8th of May. Caoimhe Hearney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Fiona O'Malley, CEO of Turn to Me. There's free support groups that have been launched for Leaving Cert students and their parents. The support groups will run until the end of June when the exams finish. We'll speak to Deirdre O'Raw. She's an ovarian cancer patient from Naas. Today is World Ovarian Cancer Day. Just 1 in 5 women in Ireland are confident of noticing the symptoms of ovarian cancer. We'll speak to Susanna Morrissey. She's a well-being coach and mindfulness expert at Om Wellness in Johnstown. Why it's important for adults to have a sense of play. And then we'll speak to Aoife Ryan Christensen. She's a journalist at RTE Brainstorm. No, it's not just you. TV and film dialogue are now harder to hear and the use of subtitles has gone through the roof. Of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, 045 898 999. Dimfna Murphy is on the phones if you want to email me. It's studio at kfmradio.com or, of course, you can send us a text.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, Turn to Me, a national mental health charity, has begun free online support groups starting next week until the end of June for students and parents feeling stressed about the Leaving Cert. Well, I'm joined now on the line by Deirdre O'Raw, by Fiona O'Malley, the CEO of Turn to Me. Good afternoon, Fiona.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you, Fiona. I think most people out there will be able to resonate with this, whether they've done the Leaving Cert or they have a child doing it or did in the past. It can be a really stressful time.
Yeah, it can be a hugely stressful time for students who are preparing for the Leaving Cert and also for parents, as you say, and indeed the entire family. We have online support groups, which will be running from this week. So we have online support groups for students on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Running up until the Leaving Cert, and then we have for parents at 6 p.m. on Thursdays, which will be also running up until the end of the Leaving Cert. So we expect for these support groups to be quite popular. They were quite popular last year with students, but we did get quite a lot of requests from parents last year looking for a similar type of support group for them. A lot of parents we spoke to would say things like, oh God, I'm so nervous for them. I wish I could sit the exam for them. I could go through it myself if it meant them not going through it. So that's why we decided this year to have two separate support groups, one for students and then one for parents as well.
It's a great idea, Fiona. I think you might have broken up there just while you were talking about when these are actually taking place. So there's two, one for parents, one for the kids. When are these, in person or online?
So they're all free. They're all online. And we chose to have them all free and online because then people can access them anywhere in the country.
Okay.
So the students one will be Wednesdays at 6 p.m. and then the parents one will be Thursdays at 6 p.m.
Okay, brilliant that we have those dates there. And people can just sign up online on turntome.ie, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And they can, I suppose it'll be a great platform for students to talk about any of the emotions that they're feeling. Like, they're really common emotions like stress, anxiety. Some students get panic attacks coming up to the Leaving Cert. Some have a fear of failure, feelings of inadequacy, low self-esteem, even depression. So there are professional mental health services there, and there are professional psychotherapists there that will give them the tools to reduce those levels of stress. Some levels of stress can be a good thing, you know, it can help us focus and make us be more productive, but obviously in higher levels it can be quite dangerous, and it can be detrimental to students' performance leading up to and during exams. So we would encourage them to sign up and get the tools to reduce those levels of anxiety and stress, so that they can perform to the best of their abilities. Some of the tools we would encourage students to do, create a study timetable and try to stick to it. We would also encourage people to take regular breaks, whether it's even 5 minutes every hour of study, even if it's to go down to the kitchen and make yourself a cup of tea or stretch the legs, walk outside, walk around the block.
Sorry, you're just breaking up there, Fiona. If you want to just move around again, unfortunately we're just losing you there. But if you're able to hear me, Fiona, something that sticks with me from my own experience. Now, I have to say, I wasn't a stressor. Like, if anyone was listening in to me now, like, I definitely was not a hard studier, unfortunately. But I remember going into my first exam, and there was a girl in front of me. Of course, everything was in alphabetical order, and she was a 600 pointer. You know, going on for medicine. That kind of thing. And I just remember her like in floods, and I mean like hysterical. And it was kind of the first minute that I looked at her and I kind of thought to myself, well, if she's crying going into this exam, I'm absolutely screwed. Do you know that kind of way? Because I knew that she, you know, she knew everything, and it just kind of hit me on that last moment. But I think, you know, if you kind of have to bring it back to the core thing of sometimes within schools, and it might not be intentional, there's this, you know, huge pressure on, like, if you fail your Leaving Cert, that, like, your life is over. And really, that's not the case.
No, it's not at all. There are so many alternative ways into courses as well now today. There was a girl similar to probably the girl you're talking about. The girl I went to school with, she never ever got an A2. She got an A1 in everything all the time. And just, I think the pressure got to her with the Leaving Cert, and I think she cracked. And she did not perform. I mean, she performed well, you know, compared to us mere mortals. But she was nowhere near the points she wanted to get for medicine. So, you know, a bit of pressure can be good, and having a study routine can be good, and a timetable, and setting aside, you know, the time that's needed, but not to the point where it's too much pressure, and not to the point where it'll, you know, cause some type of snapping, because that's really negative, and it can be really have lasting impacts on a young person's mental health if they are under that level of pressure. Now, that level of pressure can come from parents, it can come from teachers, peers, but it can often come from the students themselves. They can put an awful lot of pressure on themselves as well. So we would encourage people to be kind to themselves, to be gentle to themselves. And it sounds kind of cheesy and a bit corny, but actually quietening that negative voice that we all have at the back of our minds saying, you can't do this, you're not good enough, what if you fail? Just quieting down that voice, and then practicing self-affirmation, saying to yourself all the time, I can do it, I can do it. I know a guy, actually, I was talking to him the other day, and we were talking about the Leaving Cert and, you know, how stressful it can be for young people. And he said when he was doing the Leaving Cert, he had an awful fear of failure, and he kept saying to himself every morning leading up to the Leaving Cert, I will pass the Leaving Cert, I will pass the Leaving Cert. And at the time, it was the biggest hurdle for him in his life. And at the time, it is for so many young people. But now he's a professor. Wow. And like he's incredibly academic, you know, and even someone of his level at the time had this huge fear of failure, failing the Leaving Cert. But even if it does come to that, as you say, it's not the end of the world. There are loads of alternative routes into different courses now today, and it's fantastic. There are loads of springboard courses and pivot courses into other courses as well. If you don't get the points you initially thought you might have. So thank goodness there are, I suppose, alternative routes into the courses today.
Absolutely. And like, I think when you're younger as well, Fiona, you know, when you're coming out of school, you think a year, you know, a year is so, it's such a long period of time. So like, for example, if you've to go back and repeat, or if you've to go to something, do something else when you thought that you were going to go to, you know, UCC with all your friends, that's huge. But as you get older, you realise a year really is nothing. And, you know, you'll still be friends, and you can still have those experiences. It's just everyone will take a different path.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my best friends actually repeated the Leaving Cert, and she, I mean, at the time thought it was this massive thing, but we hang out all the time. She was still in the same group of friends, and her career in no way impacted by that. And she certainly didn't take a step back. If anything, she took the time to reevaluate, reassess what she wanted to do, had that bit of extra time to maybe plug the gaps that she was missing in terms of her the studying, and she got exactly what she wanted. So for her, it worked out really well, and it hasn't, you know, made a negative impact on her life. If anything, it was really good that she took the time to do that. And she certainly hasn't taken any step backwards in terms of her friendships, or she's not missing out on anything like that. But yeah, I would encourage people as well, if they're afraid of you know, the revision and the depth of work that they have to cover. I wouldn't consider myself to be like a naturally academic person, but one of the apps that I used when I was in law school was an app called Brainscape. It's a free online app. It's like a flashcards app, and it actually makes revision kind of fun, which I know is a very nerdy thing to say.
Okay.
But essentially, you go online, you fill out the online flashcards, and you can do 100, 500 of them, however amount you want, and it kind of brings them up with a couple of different options for you. It's nearly like MCQ style, and you can select which you think the answer is, and then it'll mark you, and the more you do it, the more the marks will you know, increase, and the more of the material you'll learn. It's difficult to explain, I suppose, unless you're actually in the app. But it's called Brainscape, and I found it really, really good. And as I say, I wouldn't consider myself to be naturally academic, and it's probably the reason I passed law school. So
okay,
I think would encourage anyone. Yeah,
sounds great. Because sometimes it gets, you know, I remember, you know, your hand cramping, and you're like, I just can't write anymore. And I wasn't a person who was able to just read things. You know, the way some people can just read through the book and like, they'll know things.
Yeah.
Whereas I had to make like that, you know, do different things. So something like Brainscape, I'm sure, would be great for people who maybe learn in a different way. Lastly, mm-hmm. before I let you go, Fiona, there's a fine line sometimes, I think, between parents putting too much pressure on a child and then maybe, you know, trying to be encouraging. How do you get the balance?
Yeah, it's a very delicate balance. And that's one of the things that parents would say to us, like, I want to encourage my child, but I don't want to put too much pressure on them. I don't want them to be a kind of breaking point. But yeah, one of the things that we would encourage parents to do is to sit down maybe with your child and to carve out a timetable that's realistic, that's sustainable for the next, just over a month, really, because it is a marathon, and people shouldn't, you know, be running out of steam. There should be, you know, regular breaks incorporated into the timetable, and then maybe lunches and dinners and stuff penciled in as well, and then just encouraging them to go for a walk in the morning to get some air into the lungs and to wake the body up and wake the brain up, and then maybe pop in every, you know, hour or so with, you know, some snacks, healthy snacks, or with a cup of tea or something like that, and just encouraging them, like, telling them they're doing a great job and things like that. That can, you know, you'd be surprised, kind of small acts of kindness can go a long way, particularly if someone's going through what can be a tricky time or a challenging time. But yeah, we would certainly encourage parents not to put too much pressure on them, but also to take positive action. Something like a study timetable, that can be really really, really productive and really positive, and show that you're obviously taking an interest and you want your child to succeed and to have a plan in place, but not to overdo it either.
Okay, well, listen, it's a great support group here, and if anyone wants to sign up, whether it be you want to sign your child up or your child is doing the Leaving Cert, there's two different options available there. You can go onto the website turntome.ie. It's turn number two. So thanks very much to Fiona O'Malley, CEO of Turn to Me, and we'll have you on again soon, Fiona. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 083 3396. 797 97 97.
Now, new research carried out in April just of this year amongst adult women has highlighted that nearly 8 out of 10 women here in Ireland are not confident that they would notice a symptom of ovarian cancer. The study was commissioned by the Irish Network for Gynecological Oncology to mark World Ovarian Cancer Day, which of course is today. And I'm joined now on the line by Deirdre O'Rourke. She's an ovarian cancer patient and she is from Naas. Good afternoon, Deirdre.
Good afternoon.
Deirdre, as I was saying to you off air, you finished your treatment in March, but you said you're never really in the clear. Can you talk us through your own journey first, please?
So in July 2020, I got diagnosed. I woke up one evening with a pain in my right hand side and I thought it was appendicitis. So I got on to my doctor and he sent me up to A&E. And when I was in A&E, they said, well, it's not appendicitis. It's actually, after a couple of tests, they said, it's actually ovarian cancer. And then 3 weeks later, I had my surgery. And 4 weeks after that, I began 16 weeks of chemo once a week. And then that finished in January 21. And then I started my maintenance treatment in March 21. And I just finished that in March 23. So I'm just finished that. But looking back on it now, I was showing signs and symptoms of ovarian cancer back in the February of 2020. I just wasn't aware of what they are.
Okay. You can talk about your own symptoms, and I'm sure maybe you didn't have all of them, but what were your own symptoms?
So for me, in February, I'd put on a lot of weight in a really short period of time. I was feeling a bit run down. I noticed that when I looked at myself in the mirror, I actually looked a bit pregnant, even though I wasn't. And then the start of July, I'd gone out for a meal one day, and the next day I woke up and my stomach was really swollen and it was very hard. And that didn't go down. I thought I was having a flare-up of IBS, but as it turned out, it wasn't. And I noticed changes in my toilet habit as well. So I had a good few of the symptoms towards the end, but not so many of them at the start. And it was kind of every little symptom I had, I just put it down to being in my 40s and getting that little bit older or a little bit slower, that kind of thing.
Yeah. The campaign is emphasising BEAT, so B-E-A-T, the symptoms. So bloating that is persistent and doesn't come and go, eating less and feeling full more quickly, abdominal and pelvic pain you feel most days, and toilet changes in urination or bowel habits. And they're saying if you've any of these symptoms that you should contact your GP. The one thing that really strikes me from this campaign, Deirdre, is that 1 in 3 mistakenly believe cervical screening checks for all gynecological cancers. I actually thought that it did. And is there any checks that you can get or that they do for people?
So unfortunately, there's no test that will check for ovarian cancer. So that's why I'd say to any woman, you know your body and you know what's right for you. And if you notice any of those symptoms that last longer than 3 weeks, well, then really do go and see your GP, because there is no definite test. And if you can go into your GP and say to him, well, I have 2 of the 4 symptoms, it's just giving him or her more information. And it's also giving you more information to be able to fight your case and say, well, I think it's this.
Okay, so ultimately that's, you know, it didn't come to that for you, but you're saying like these cervical swabs and smears that people are getting, they are not going to check for ovarian cancer.
No, your cervical smear literally checks for cervical cancer.
Okay, so people need to be on top of that. How are you feeling now, Deirdre?
I'm doing good. I'm starting to get my life back on track. As I said, I finished treatment in March. So it's trying to get all the chemicals and all out of my body and get fit and healthy, because there's such a high risk of recurrence with this disease. It's getting myself fit and ready for if it happens to me again.
Okay. And what is the recurrence rate? Is it quite high?
It's 80%.
Okay. Okay.
So it is.
That's
high.
Very tough to deal with, Deirdre. You seem like a very strong woman, and we wish you all the best here in KFM. Thanks so much for coming on with us today to raise awareness about this. If you wouldn't mind again, Deirdre, just going through some of the symptoms that people should be looking out for in terms of ovarian cancer.
So it's the beet symptoms. So bloating that lasts a long time and doesn't go down. Eating less and feeling fuller quicker. You'll have abdominal or pelvic pain, and if you notice any prolonged changes in your toilet habits.
Okay, thank you very much.
If you have any of those symptoms for more than 3 weeks, go and get checked out.
Okay, Deirdre O'Rourke, ovarian cancer patient from NACE, thanks so much for joining us. And just to let people know, to reiterate there again, for ovarian cancer, because I was honestly shocked when I heard this earlier, one in three, including myself, mistakenly believe that the cervical screening checks for all gynecological cancers, which it does not. So if you are in doubt about anything, you do have to go to your doctor and you have to push, because currently they are not actually screening for that. And thanks very much to Deirdre. Now, it's not just you. TV and film dialogue are now harder to hear, and the use of subtitles has gone through the roof. Now, I'm joined on the line by RTE Brainstorm's Aoife Ryan Christensen, who's going to tell us all about this. Good afternoon, Aoife.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you on, Aoife. Listen, when I saw this earlier on, I thought to myself, well, thank God, because I actually got a hearing test done last year because I thought I was going deaf in one ear. Obviously, this is a trend.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. You're 100% not alone. I'm the same. I have subtitles on all the time. So, yeah, I was delighted to hear I wasn't alone either. So in terms of the figures, there haven't been any big studies yet, but there are a few different surveys. And Netflix itself has said that 40% of viewers have subtitles on all the time, and 80% of viewers use them at least once a month. Now, there have been other surveys as well. A YouGov survey of over 3,000 people found nearly two-thirds of people aged 18 to 24 watch TV in their native language with subtitles on. And that just goes down, actually, as you get into older age groups. So basically, if you're under 50, you're using subtitles, So in terms of kind of why that happens, we don't entirely know, and that's maybe the problem or the big question. It's a lot of different things. So I spoke to Dr. Andrew Hines, who's an assistant professor in UCD, who's actually working on a project about the use of subtitles and how audio quality might be influencing that. He's doing that at Inside SFI Research Centre. And anecdotally, you know, there's loads of different reasons. You know, there are people who have hearing impairments. Sometimes the dialogue audio is just difficult to hear. The lines can be difficult to decipher, so we need the subtitles to actually catch what's being said. But a lot of it is also to do with how we're consuming, you know, our TV shows and our films. We could be multitasking, looking at our phones, doing the dishes, struggling with our concentration, our attention span, or indeed watching content in something other than our native language. You know, we've seen huge growth in non-English language shows in particular in the last few years.
Absolutely, yeah. So I suppose, yeah, look, there's all a variety of different reasons. I know they say people of my generation, maybe we're listening to music too loud, that kind of thing, and that potentially might be an issue too. But I suppose, what can we do then if we don't know exactly like how to pinpoint it? Do we just turn up the volume and go with it?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's actually part of the, you know, part of the problem. There are two key things. One is the sound itself. Of course, we're watching on TVs at home, on phones, on laptops, on iPads or tablets, different things like that. And, well, the fact is, actually, there's not really a whole lot you can do. If you're watching on a TV, some TVs come with different settings that you can play around with. You know, is it a film, is it a TV show, is it sport? Is it music? So that's worth taking a look at, definitely, if you feel like you need a bit of a sound boost. And the other thing is, like, streamers are aware of this problem with the fact that people can't really understand what's being said sometimes. So Amazon Prime, for example, have introduced a new thing called audio or dialogue boost on everything coming out of their own studios. So there's, you know, little things like that you can do, but unfortunately there's not actually a whole lot we can do. And that is because the two key reasons that have been highlighted is there's a change in kind of the approach to acting, and there's a change in the way sound has been recorded and designed and then played back on our TVs and our phones. So those are the two kind of primary reasons, and they're out of our own hands.
Okay, yeah. Sometimes I notice I'm watching a movie, and if it's on TV and it goes to an ad, you're watching it and you think, oh yeah, grand. And next thing, it comes to an ad and it's blaring across the house, like, you know, you have to reach for the remote quickly to turn it down. And there can be such a contrast, even just from going from the show into an ad break.
Yeah. And I think and that really comes down to the change in sound. So, I also spoke to producer and mixer Kieran Lynch, who's a dialogue editor. And the thing is that we have this dialogue that now increasingly gets delivered in this naturalistic fashion. People might be mumbling or speaking more quietly. It's not that stage-like delivery that we might associate with golden era Hollywood, for example. So, and this sound is getting recorded on these little mics, these lav mics that sit very close to the mouth. And they're picking up a lot of these like low frequency bass frequencies, and the fact is that once you get to the other side of that recording, you simply can't just turn that up. You know, people say, can you not just turn up the audio, can you not just, you know, in the recording itself, and you can't do that because those bass sounds are what make it sound kind of super muddy. And on top of that, our ears actually prefer mid-range frequencies. They prioritize them. So on the one hand, you have this dialogue being, which is very naturalistic, getting recorded with loads of these bass frequencies. And on the other hand, that's not what our ears like to hear. And on top of that, we like to prioritize kind of visual cues. So that's the other element of subtitles, is that, you know, we like seeing what we're hearing, to put it simply. You know, all in all, our brains like to prioritize visual cues. So we like subtitles and they help us understand what's going on. So that's also a big part of it.
Okay, it's so interesting. And like anyone who works with audio now, like obviously in here, you know, we work with it a lot. And sometimes if something's recorded too low, like you can't, it's not just a case of turning it up or, you know, boosting it, because it can get distorted and it doesn't sound the same then. So sometimes it's just really out of your hands. If it's too low, like there's not much you can do in relation to that, Aoife.
No, there isn't. By the time it's you know, been recorded, as I say, picked up by these mics, then it comes to the post-production bit. And those low frequencies, that muddiness, that naturalistic mumbling, if you just turn that up, all you get is more muddiness, more buzzing. And you can't just, you know, at the end of the day, you know, dialogue editors or sound editors are also looking for that balance. They're looking to avoid that thing that you're talking about, where you have somebody talking and it might be a certain volume, and then maybe you have sound effects that are really, really low and really, really loud, or other background noise. And that all has to be balanced. And if you just turn up one, it affects everything else as well. And you can't just turn up a low voice, because that just makes it sound wrong.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Aoife, thanks so much for coming on with us today. That's Aoife Ryan Christensen, journalist at RTE Brainstorm, telling us there that no, it's not just you. The TV and film dialogue are now harder to hear, and people are using more subtitles. And yeah, I mean, I'm part of that club. So thanks to Aoife for clearing all of that up. Now we'll take a quick break, and after that, we'll be speaking about mindfulness and well-being. So don't go away. Pink and Trust Fall, a great song there. When that song first came out, I thought it's a trust fund baby, and that's what I was singing for ages, until I realised it wasn't. But there you go, it's Trust Fall by Pink. Unfortunately, I don't have a trust fund. Most people, I think, in Ireland wouldn't have a trust fund. Big thing over in the US though, many people over there, I suppose from the wealthier cohorts, would have a trust fund. But I'm a terror for that, like singing along to the song and it's the totally the wrong words. There's another song by Coldplay that my cousins sing along to the chorus and they say chicken fried rice, which is absolutely not the song. But there you go. Look, we make up our own thing as we go along. And that's something that's important to do, because if it's a bit of a play, it's a bit of a joke. And apparently, that's what we need to do. We need to, as adults, have a sense of play in our lives. Because I'm joined now on the line by wellbeing coach and mindfulness expert, Om Wellness in Johnstown, Susanna Morrissey. Good afternoon, Susanna.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. Lovely story there. I loved it.
I'm terrible.
I can definitely identify with that. My son is always saying the same about me.
Yeah. So like playtime, it's not just for children. And we need to kind of release that tension and prevent burnout in our lives. Because sometimes as you get older, you kind of lose that sense of playfulness and, you know, the ability to kind of let go of the worries.
Absolutely, you're so right. And I think what's happened now is we're so switched on, we're too switched on, that we've actually lost that ability to let ourselves play, you know, without any outcomes as such. So, you know, what's really interesting is that the brain is kind of hardwired for play. There's a part in the brain that says, you know, I yearn for that, like, swing. If they see a swing in the forest, they want, an adult wants to jump on the swing. That's actually in our brain chemistry, and we need play to survive, not just to thrive, you know. So it's a huge part of our health.
Yeah, so like I think maybe we should start campaigning for adults playgrounds around the county or something like that.
Definitely think so.
Because sometimes I'm walking past a playground and I'll say, God, I'd love to run in on that swing. And my boyfriend will be saying, Caoimhe, like, come on now. You know, like, you can't do that. But like, why not, you know?
Well, I think we should also have some sort of campaign for fun, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we've lost the art of fun for no particular reason. I think you're so right. I think what's happened is in our day-to-day life that's so fast-paced, we've really tried to schedule too much, I feel like, hard fun. We don't really do fun for the sake of no outcome, like dancing in the kitchen to a song you haven't heard of in a while, or, you know, kicking a ball around. I mean, my son, actually, as an example, he's doing his Leaving Cert, and good luck to him, Evan, in June. And the other day he was upstairs and he just finished, you know, the grind, the hard grind, and said, and a good big shout out to all the Leaving Cert out there.
Absolutely.
But he said, where are you going? Well, I'm just going to kick a ball. And I said, oh, all right, that's great. And where? I don't know, Mum. I'm just going to drive up and kick a ball somewhere. And I thought, that's wonderful. And I think it's what we're saying is that we are frightened of doing things that aren't kind of planned and kind of scheduled. And that inhibits us.
I think as adults, and children and adults, let them have it. Susanna, there's such a drive nowadays for productivity. And like, if you're not, if every inch of your day isn't productive or bringing you to, you know, your next goal, that it's just a waste of time. But I for one, don't think that's the way we should be going.
I think you're absolutely right. I totally agree with you, because, you know, we're not machines. We have to reboot our phones at the end of the day. But, you know, human beings, I mean, it's quite astounding now, as you just said. I mean, 47% of people now are feeling more tired than ever.
Mm.
And that's since COVID. So there's something wrong. You know, we're missing out on a massive component. And I think it's play. I thought, like, obviously during lockdowns, people found maybe things like sea swimming. I certainly did. Mm. And they found other activities to distract themselves. And I think that's what it is. I think we've lost the art of distraction for the right things. And we've got distracted by the wrong things, if you like, our lovely always on kind of phone. Mm. So I think it's really about getting outdoors. It's a great time of year to start something. Shared connection is about being in the flow. From my point of view, in terms of mindfulness, even at work, mindfulness is not just something you do, or you sit on top of a mountain and meditate. It's really taking small breaks throughout the day to do something that has no particular purpose. I mean, sometimes, you know, the thought of doing nothing for people scares people, but it's so important that we don't have a focus 24/7. And I certainly would love to see that more in terms of work, you know, life balance, where people have an active kind of, you know, rest, play, break, you know. There used to be an ad called Work Hard, Play Hard, Mars. And now I think it's become, you know, work hard, you know, play harder. Like, we've forgotten, everything's intense.
Yeah, it is. It's intense. And before you came on today, I remember, I'm a great one for quotes and people slag me for it, but I remember seeing a quote and I just looked it up before you came on and it said, we don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing. And I think that's so true. Like, you know, just because you're a certain age doesn't mean you can't go out and have the crack. Like, I have a younger brother and he's 15 and I'm 30. And he'll say to me, like, oh, grow up, Caoimhe. You're 30. And I'm saying to him, but that doesn't mean you can't have fun, you know? That doesn't mean you can't go out and do things. And I know, I suppose, children look at us as, you know, much older. But we don't have to act like that. You don't have to be so serious all the time.
I think so, too. And I think fear has become a huge factor in people's lives. Like, I think people fear sort of being playful and sort of, you know, letting themselves go a little. And that doesn't necessarily involve alcohol, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that can be good. But in terms of just letting their hair down or, you know, being, you know, unique. I think we've lost that through fear. And I think it's a huge area. People are fearful of being who they really are. And to be your authentic self and to be who you are is just that absolute sole purpose we all need in our lives. So never underestimate it. Because learning is enhanced by play. Like, you know, if you look at it, if you have a playful spirit, you will actually thrive in academics, you'll thrive in school, you'll thrive if you have a sense of that kind of entrepreneurial, if you like, spirit. It's not just a fixed mindset. So I think it's part of that growth mindset as well, where you take risks, you know, you make mistakes and you dust yourself off and you start again. And I think play is that kind of part. I mean, it's really interesting. Adult colouring books, the sale has skyrocketed since 2019, and people are buying, or getting into escape rooms, which was something I only recently heard of, and they sound like a great thing to do. But what about going out, for a walk with no phone? I mean, looking at nature, hearing the birds, and kind of dreaming.
Yeah, that's definitely one to do. I don't want to cut you off, Susanna, but I have to go to news now. But thank you so much, Susanna Morrissey, well-being coach and mindfulness expert at Om Wellness in Johnstown. You can check her out online. Thanks very much to Susanna.